Bhagavan, the Lord. Dharma Vatsalaha. Very much fond of religious principles. Dharma Gyan. Persons who are aware of religious principles. Shila Sampanan. Very well behaved. Prita. Being pleased. Pritan. Of very gentle behavior. Uvacha. Talk with them. Ha. In the past. The translation, Lord Shiva became very pleased with the Prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. So you can repeat, Lord Shiva became very pleased, with the Prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, is known as Bhakta Vatsal. And herein, we find Lord Shiva described as Dharma Vatsala. Of course, the word Dharma Vatsala refers to a person who lives according to religious principles. That is understood. Nonetheless, these two words have additional significance. Sometimes Lord Shiva has to deal with persons who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. Such persons are not always very much religious and pious in their activities. But since they worship Lord Shiva for some material profit, they sometimes obey the religious principles. As soon as Lord Shiva sees that his devotees are following religious principles, he blesses them. The Prachetas, sons of Pachinabharhi, were naturally very pious and gentle, and consequently Lord Shiva was immediately pleased with them. Lord Shiva could understand that the princes were sons of Vaishnavas, and as such Lord Shiva offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as follows. So, Satan Prapanarti Haruhu Bhagavan Dharma Vatsalaha Dharma Gyanshila Sampanan Prita Pritan Uvachaha. So, Omagana Timurandasha Gudanjana Shlakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, just this word, let's analyze a little bit first the word Vatsala. It's interesting. Vatsal means dear or cherished, and it also could refer to a little calf. You know, my little calf. Vatsasura was the calf demon. Anyway, so you'll find very often that the parents will call their children Vatsa. My dear Vatsa, my dear son, cherished son. Okay. So that's the meaning. So there's Bhakta Vatsal, which is Krishna, and also a devotee here in North Carolina. And there's Dharma Vatsal, which basically means dear to those who are performing religious principles, activities, or even rituals. And so, let's tell some stories that illustrate how Krishna is bhaktavatsal rather than dharmavatsal. And the story that first comes to mind in this regard is the story of the ritualistic brahmanas from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the story is as follows, those of you who understand Krishna book or read Krishna book. Once upon a time, what's all that noise? Is it trucks or something?
It's a cleaning thing or painting or something. Almost like a mower.
The mower, that's all right. So once upon a time, Krishna and the cowherd boys were herding cows. And the cowherd boys said to Krishna, we're hungry. Naturally, those in the spiritual world do not experience hunger like we experience hunger. They were actually hungry to see Krishna's pastimes. It's not that their little stomachs are just like growling and like that. Of course, under Yoga Maya, they're thinking like that. So they said, we're hungry. So Krishna said, I have a solution. Very close to here, there are some brahmanas with their wives who are performing these sacrifices. So you should go to the brahmanas and ask them, in the name of Balaram, not my name, to give us some of the food. So Krishna was saying, well, we should do it in the name of Balaram because Balaram is known as a Kshatriya. No one is well known that Balaram was the son of Rohini and Vasudev, so definitely a pure Kshatriya family, where Krishna is generally known as the son of Nanda and Yashoda, which means Vaishya family. So maybe the Brahmanas would give to Kshatriyas, maybe. But at least giving to Vaishyas, you know, Vaishyas are not supposed to beg for Brahmanas. Isn't that prohibited? It's prohibited. And so is Kshatriyas. It's prohibited. But still, they're a higher class. So they went, and they basically saw the sacrifice, and they said, oh, gods of the earth, you know, referring to the Brahmanas. And it's interesting, the relationship between Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. I was just hearing from the Ramayana that when Lord Ram... That's a bird. When Lord Ram was entering the Dandakaranya forest, what happened was that the Brahmanas, they went to Lord Ram and they said, look, the Kshatriya who does not protect the Brahmanas, basically, he's not fulfilling his duty, and basically he'll go to hell. He won't go to heaven. And the Kshatriya who protects the Brahmanas, he gets something like 1/6 of the Brahmanas' pious activities. He gets to go to heaven just because he's protecting the Brahmanas, and he doesn't have to do any of the sacrifices or austerities. Because it's interesting, when Lord Ram entered the forest, there were different types of Brahmanas executing austerities. One type of Brahmana was living just by breathing the air. Another would just eat raw roots. Another one would just eat the leaves from the trees, you know, the different varieties. You're just hearing about all these austerities in the Ramayana. It's quite interesting. Valmiki Ramayana. So anyway, so the Kshatriya, simply by serving and protecting the Brahmanas, would actually go to heaven. So the Kshatriya is considered less than the Brahmins, but the relationship between the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas is very, very, very tight. Of course, in the Ramayana, the Brahmanas showed Lord Ram and Lakshman all the dead bodies of the other Brahmanas who had died being killed by the Rakshasas. Terrible Rakshasas. And they were just begging, please protect us. Please protect us. So, anyway, let's get back to the story. So, cowherd boys went to the Brahmanas and said, best of the Brahmanas, please give us food. And the Brahmanas basically ignored them. They said, you know, we want some pratna. Like Balaram is asking for this, and, you know, Krishna's also hungry. And so the Brahmanas just like said, you know, these puny kids. It's just like if someone was giving Bhagavatam class and the kids started speaking, you just like, take them out of here. You ever seen that? Because I try not to do that. But still, you know, it's quite disturbing. You know, take them out of here. You know, let the mothers take them away. You know, get out of here, kids. So they went back to Krishna. Because these Brahmanas were very much into rituals. They were also like dharma, like we find the purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These are what ritualistic people are interested in. The Dharma means religious rituals. They really get into it. Of course, that if someone gets too much into religious rituals, it disconnects them from the purpose of the rituals. The purpose of the rituals, of course, the purpose of the Vedic literatures is to know Krishna. Vedais cha sabhara aham eva vedyo, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So, and also Rupa Goswami states in the Upadeshamrita that if someone gets too much into the rituals, that's called niyam agraha. That means performing the rules and regulations, just being into the rituals, you know, the dharma. And so dharma, so generally someone who's interested in dharma is also interested in artha. And that's why you're doing dharma. And why are you interested in artha? Artha means economic development or economic development, depending on how you pronounce it. And then you're interested because of kama. And then when you've exhausted yourself with the kama, you've fallen in love enough times, then you say moksha, or you want liberation. So these are the purusharthas. Purusha means person or mankind, and artha means like goals in this particular context. So, and of course, we know this panchamam purushartha, which is Krishna prema. So the Brahmanas, they were interested in these four purusharthas. Let's do some rituals. Let's get some wealth. And at the end, you know, we can enjoy. I mean, that's the motivation. And then maybe get liberated, go to heaven afterwards. So they ignored the boys. The boys went back to Krishna. And Krishna said, all right, these Brahmanas, they're just ritualistic guys. So you should go to their wives who were great devotees and tell them that I'm hungry. You know, in other words, when they went to the Brahmanas, it was like Balaram's hungry. And when they went to the wives, it was Krishna's hungry. Because these wives are great devotees. The wives of actually here, the wives of the Brahmanas, they had heard about Krishna continually. And they actually wanted, they were developing an intense desire to see Krishna. So that, they're bhaktas rather than dharmas, dharmis. There's karmis, bhaktas, and dharmis. Anyway, so when they heard about that, they immediately grabbed all the ingredients for the sacrifice. And without even saying goodbye to their husbands, you know, the chaste wives, without even saying goodbye to their husbands, they just picked them up and brought them to Krishna Balaram. And Krishna asked them, you know, why are you here? The same thing he asked the gopis when they came to see him. You know, why have you come in the middle of the night? Don't you understand it's dangerous? So it wasn't the middle of the night. It was the middle of the day. So he said, why are you here? But they actually had taken Krishna within their hearts. And they had, it's interesting, they had conjugal attraction for Krishna described in the Bhagavatam. It wasn't that they were just motherly affection. They had conjugal attraction for Krishna. And so Krishna took all the ingredients and everything like that, and they enjoyed. And Krishna said, all right, go back to your husbands. And they said, we are not going back to our husbands. That's it, you know. We're staying with you. And basically they said, even if we just have to wander the forest here, you know, we're not going back home. Plus our husband's going to be pretty upset with us after ruining the whole sacrifice like that. And Krishna said, this is not a very good idea. Why is this not a good idea? Brahmin ladies knew that Krishna had been dancing with the gopis. You know, so why not us? You can dance with the gopis, you know, married ladies, but you can't dance with us. And Krishna said, this is not appropriate, you know. It's appropriate for me to have relationships with gopis because I'm a gopa. You understand? Of course, we're not saying that one of the same varna should have illicit relationships with someone. That's all right. You know, if you're a vaishya, you can have a relationship with a vaishi. And if you're shudra, you can have a relationship with a shudrani. And a kshatriya with a kshatriyi. and a brahmana with a brahmani. No. But Krishna was using that excuse. He said, this is not appropriate. People are going to really criticize. Like Krishna was worried about the whole thing. He said, people are going to really criticize me for having relationships with Brahmins' wives. Because in the Vedic culture, that is a fact, that the Brahmins are considered like worldly gods. You hear this all the time in the Ramayana. The worldly gods. You understand? And then the Kshatriyas are described. That's sort of like the description. And the Kshatriyas described one with strong arms. Pushant, you know, whatever that means. That means like heroic, basically. The Pushant Ram. So then the Kshatriyas are not generally described as worldly gods. They're described as the, one of the strong arms or the heroic or whatever. So anyway, so the Brahmins are very much respected in the Vedic society. So Krishna wanted to keep that respect for the Brahmanas. And so he ordered the Brahmanas' wives to go back. And they still said, you know, even if we don't stay with you, we're just going to stay in this forest. We're not going back home. And Krishna said, don't worry. When you go back home, your husbands will appreciate you. Every wife would like to hear that. And so they, accepting Krishna's instructions, went back home. And the husbands actually appreciated it. The husband said, you know, the hell, as Prabhupada described, this is actually Prabhupada's words in the Krishna book, also in the 10th canto, it says the same thing. You know, the hell with this Brahmanal school, dedication to this, to that. Our wives have developed love for Krishna, which is the goal of Vedic culture. So the Brahmanas were just understanding, and they very much appreciated it. And actually, they loved their wives for their wives' devotion to Krishna. But still, because they were attached to the ritualistic activities of the Vedas, not only that, the dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, the other things that come about as a result of that, they still didn't go to see Krishna because they were afraid of Kamsa. They were thinking, you know, if Kamsa hears about this, he's going to hurt us. Whereas their wives were not afraid of Kamsa. They weren't afraid of even anyone, of their husbands or their maintenance. You know, just in the Vedic culture, like for a woman to leave her husband like that, I mean, it's just like you see that Lord Ram had to simply send Sita away because there was some question as to her chastity. Can you imagine that? How strict that was. And of course, that was after hearing from that washerman whose wife came back late one night. I mean, if people in modern culture kick their wives away because they come back late one night, we'd even have a higher divorce rate than we do now. Actually, the divorce rate is going down now. Did you know that? In America, because less people are getting married. That's why you can't believe in statistics. You know, there's a big article the other day, you know, divorce rate lower than it's been in 20 years. But what they didn't understand is that, you know, 30, 40, 50% of the Americans, they're living together without getting married now. So obviously the divorce rate's going down because less people are getting married. You don't need a divorce if you're not married, right? So what the women did was not only did they show fearlessness, that's a bhakta. As we find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's surrendering principles, you know, to feel the Lord is always protecting one, the Lord is always maintaining one. These are the two principles of fearlessness, because people are worried, you know, who's going to take care of me, what's going to happen, what if this happens. And you see great preachers, they're fearless. Of course, that was Prabhupada's quality, one of his many good qualities, Abhaya Chalana Aravinda. He was fearless enough to come to the United States, having no, like, observable or external means of sustenance or maintenance. He came, so that fearlessness. So that's the quality of a bhakta, or a bhaktin. That they're just simply fearless. Like that. So, but the husbands were not fearless. They were not completely dependent on Krishna. So they didn't go to see Krishna, even though they could have seen Krishna. Can you imagine that? Imagine Krishna's just there, like maybe 1 kilometer away, or 2/3 of a mile for those of you who are Americans. But Krishna was just there. Can you imagine if you knew that Krishna was there at the bottom of the hill on our property, and you didn't go to see him? Because your wife wouldn't be happy with you, or your husband wouldn't be happy with you? Come on. And that's how the problem, that's how the Brahmanas were feeling. So there's one story showing the distinction between Dharma Vatsal and Bhakta Vatsal. You know, Krishna is actually Bhakta Vatsal. And another story is from Chaitanya Leela, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally showed the Brahmanas not to be attached to their rituals. And the way he did that was when he was a young boy. He would go to the banks of the Ganges River, and the Brahmanas, they'd be saying their different mantras, specifically the Gayatri Mantra. And as they would be saying their mantra, he would do different things, like spit water in their faces, which contaminates everything. Or he'd dive under the water and pull their legs out from under them. And, you know, and steal their deities. You know, they made little Shiva lingas and everything on the shore. He would do all those things to show them, you know, it's not important. And also with the ladies, he did the same thing. Not the same thing. They weren't saying Gayatri mantras. But they were worshiping. They were worshiping Durga and Lord Shiva, and he would just take their ingredients away and say, just worship me. You know, worship me. And if you don't worship me properly, I'm going to curse you to get married to an old man who and have 4 co-wives. You know, some old buzzard. And so, you know, the girls would get extremely nervous, and they agreed to worship Krishna. So we see that Lord Chaitanya showed the same principle. So when Krishna sees this devotion of his devotees, this fearlessness, then Krishna gives himself to those individuals. Just like in the... let's tell the story about Krishna entering Mathura. When Krishna entered Mathura, he first of all asked the washerman for clothes, and the washerman was not fearless. The washerman said, these are Kamsa's clothes. So what did Krishna do? He decapitated the washerman, the poor washerman, with his hand. Yet, when he went to this Kubja, and Kubja was also having the sandalwood for Kamsa. I mean, everything was basically for Kamsa. When he went to Kubja, and Kubja was mixing the sandalwood, he said, can I have this, myself and my brother? And Kubja, without a second thought, smeared the sandalwood paste that was meant for Kamsa on Krishna and Balaram. And then Krishna just grabbed her like this by the cheeks and straightened her up. So that's the quality of someone who is a bhakta, you understand? So, but most of us are actually dharma vatsal, not vatsal, that's Lord Shiva, but dharmavadis. That means we're into the rituals like that, not remembering what is behind the rituals. And that sort of disconnects us from Krishna. Whereas the great devotees, of course, they may do the rituals insofar as they're possible, but they actually ultimately surrender to Krishna. And if need be, they can either give up certain rituals or even violate certain principles, like the gopis violated the principles of dancing with Krishna in the middle of the night. Or Krishna asked Yudhisthira to lie. Of course, Yudhisthira didn't do it, and that's why he had a reaction. Or Krishna asked Arjuna in the battle to kill Karna when Karna was unarmed. I mean, that's an interesting story. Like, Karna, what happened is that Karna had offended a Brahmana, so he got cursed by the Brahmana. He had killed a calf or a cow by accident. So he got cursed that one day his chariot would be swallowed up by the earth. And also he got cursed by Parashuram, that when he wanted to use the Brahmastra weapon and it came time for his ultimate demise, he would forget the mantras. So poor Karna, he was fighting with Arjuna. His whole life was just dedicated to defeating Arjuna. And so what happened was that his chariot got swallowed up by the earth at the final moment, and he got down from the chariot to try to pick the chariot up, you know, to get it out of the mud. And he was struggling. And Krishna said to Arjuna, kill him. And Arjuna said, this is against Dharma. This is against the rules of a Kshatriya. And Krishna said to Arjuna, just to rile him up further, did Karna think about that when they were attacking Abhimanyu? Did Karna think about that when he insulted Draupadi, when there was the attempted disrobing of Draupadi? He called Draupadi a prostitute. Did he think about that? So why are you thinking about Dharma now? And so Arjuna, like, he pulled back, and Karna said, how could you do this? You know, he's looking fearfully at Arjuna as Arjuna pulled his bowstring back and then let the arrow go, and then Karna's head flew off. So you see, that's an example how a devotee even can renounce Dharma. Of course, Krishna does say that the Dharma and the material Dharma we're talking about. I mean, there's different meanings of the word Dharma. I mean, like Prabhupada gives the meaning, the ultimate meaning of the word Dharma is that which is inseparable from a thing. Like Prabhupada says, the Dharma of what is what? Does anyone know that example? Wet, and another one Prabhupada get. Fire is heat and light. So these are inseparable qualities. Like the Dharma, Prabhupada used that in regard to the soul. The Dharma of the soul is what? Yeah, Jivera Svarupahoy, Nitya Krishna Das. That's the Dharma. It's the inseparable quality of something. Or as we say in philosophy, it's the ontological position. You know, ontological means, you know, basically what the identity is, what this position is of either a living entity or the material world or whatever. So, but the common use of the word Dharma is the word, is translated as just duty. That's how most Hindus use the word Dharma, is duty. You know, it's my Dharma to take care of my family. Yes, it is, we're not denying it. It is your duty to take care of the family. But really, to use the word Dharma in that context is not quite appropriate, because it's not the eternal nature. You know, it's not inseparable from you. You understand what I mean? It's not inseparable. It's not that 500 years from now, in the next birth or your next five births, you're going to be taking care of your family. You may be a sannyasi. Or you may be an aunt. So it's not really the Dharma of the soul. It's not really your Dharma. But, however, in common usage, the word Dharma is there. So when Krishna says to Arjuna in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Purichasha, he's referring to basically the common usage of the word Dharma. He's not referring to give up your eternal nature. You know, Jivera Svarupahoy, Nitya Krishna, don't give that up. He's not saying that to Arjuna. He's saying give up your concepts of what you think your duty is. So he's using it in the common understanding of the word Dharma. So he says, Sarva Dharma Puricchaya. So that's how a devotee has to feel. That, Mame Kam Shananam Braja, don't fear. What's there to fear? So this is the quality of someone who is bhakti-vatsal. Sarva-dharman puricheja. He's given up his ordinary concepts of duty. Mamekam sharanam braja. He's ekeha kurunandana. Ekam, one. Sharanam braja. Go ahead and do it. You understand? Aham tvam sarva-papebhyo. I'm going to save you from all the papevyo. This is very much, papevyo means sin. If you don't do your duty, there's so much sin, right? Same thing when we're talking about dharma. Like the brahmanas, we're thinking, you know, we have to do the sacrifice. They'll be so sinful. If we don't do it, we're going to get a reaction. Yudhisthira was thinking, if I tell a lie, I'm going to get a reaction. Arjuna was thinking, if I kill Karna like this, I'm going to get a reaction. You know, so aham tvam sarva papevyo, all the sinful reactions that you might have had otherwise, moksha yishyami masucha, you're going to be liberated and you don't have to fear anything. So as much as we're fearing in this world, that indicates to the same extent we are not surrendered to Krishna. We're not really bhaktas or devotees, as much as we're fearing like that. Because that's the difference between dharma vatsal and bhakta vatsal. Krishna is the pleaser or the affectionate, actually even more than pleasing, affectionate to his bhaktas who have given everything up, like all other means given up to please Krishna, like Draupadi. She gave up all of other means to protect herself and just surrendered to Krishna and depended on Krishna, and then Krishna became the sari. So any questions or comments about these things? No? Yeah.
The brahmanas, you know, in this age, it's like I was living with some devotees that were caste brahmanas.
Yeah.
But they don't act like it.
They don't act like what? They don't act dharmic or...
Well,
no, the caste brahmanas, nowadays it's just like a name only. The brahmanas during Krishna's pastimes that we were talking about were actually ritualistic brahmanas, and they followed all the rules and regulations. But nowadays, if just one has a brahminical name, they can eat any damn thing and they consider themselves brahmanas. I mean, a brahmana would never go to a restaurant, for example. I mean, it's just like inconceivable. Because a brahmana wants to protect. I mean, just even if a brahmana, let's say even if a brahmana has so water from a shudra thrown at him, the whole thing becomes contaminated. Even if a brahmana sees someone engaged in sinful activity, he has to go to the Ganges and jump in. You know, so there's many restrictions that a brahmana has to follow. A brahmana has to keep a fire going in his house all the time. The ritualistic brahmana. Did you know that? They have a fire. This is the tradition. There's a fire, a sacred fire. They keep it going all the time, 24 hours a day. It can't be extinguished. So these brahmanas nowadays, they're just brahmanas in name only. They're called Brahma Bandhus. Brahma Bandhu means the friend of a brahman or a family member of a brahman. Yeah, yeah, South India. Not all of them are like that. But generally what I've seen is those who have Brahminical names are not following Brahminical culture. So any other questions? No? Okay, all glories to Sri Lankan glory. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.